Welcome to the Dark Depth Podcast, your go-to place in modern and legacy format. I'm one of your hosts, Billy Mitchell, and with me, as always, the Thran physician himself, Michael Matheson. How are you?
I mean, you say, like, always, but I haven't been here in a month.
I don't think I've been here in a month. I feel like, with the holiday, I know you were sick, which it looks like you're obviously feeling better, which is great. Bad time, and Christmas, we had the week off for Christmas too, so, but we're back, 2024, looking, off to a good start. You've been here every week in 2024, that's something.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Also, since we're talking about Christmas, I want to point out to the listeners, not last year, because that year just ended, but 2 years ago, we had Gavin on for holidays with mm-hmm. Gavin, and we said he'd be back every year, and then we immediately failed. That's my fault. I kind of dropped the ball with scheduling. I was like focused on Atlanta, and then also I was sick for like 3 weeks. But he is coming for a belated holidays episode, so he will be on later this month. So it is coming, just after the holidays, which is cool. We can hear about his Christmas. He went to Disney.
Ooh, yeah,
it'll be fun. You know,
I mean, it could be like a post-holiday early Black History Month. We can try to shoehorn that into one super Gavin holiday. It'll be super sweet.
Excited for that. It'll be the best episode of the year. Sorry to any future guest. Your episodes suck. Gavin's is the best.
Yeah. I just imagine like XJ's just at home just like, what did I do? Like no, obviously we definitely have some great guests every year, but Gavin is definitely, I think, the one people look the most forward to, probably. So that'll be sweet. I know we got a lot of things we wanted to talk about before we jump into the bulk of the show, which is going to be modern, just because the modern RCQ season is starting up. I think it's important that we start kind of breaking down the format for people who have been focusing on Legacy like we have. We've been playing a ton of Legacy lately, to get back into modern, what's hot, what's good. But I do want to quick talk about Eternal Weekend, because I know it's been a couple weeks since we had it, but we haven't actually been on the show together, I guess, minus the week we had with TK. We haven't got a chance to talk about our Eternal Weekend, so do you want to give a quick rundown of what happened while in Pittsburgh for you?
Yeah. Oh, no, I did not come prepared. Where is my list of things I played against? Man, I'm struggling. Okay, so, whatever. We got in on, oh god, what day did we get? Mm-hmm. Friday?
The Thursday. We got in on Thursday.
Thursday night, yeah. But first event, Friday morning, we played the High Roller event. I ended up playing Green-Black Turbo Depths. A lot of people asked me throughout the day, was I playing Legolas's Quick Reflexes. I was not playing that card. I think that card is not good in the deck. And that's not to say it's not bad. That's not to say it's bad, rather. But it's just not as exciting in that deck as other decks. I played Cameo Safekeeping, which is also a protection spell, but it doesn't have Split Second, which is obviously worse. But it does target any permanent, so you can protect a Dark Depths from a Wasteland or a Ghost Quarter or whatever, and that is a huge upside. In terms of actually like killing something when Merit Lage attacks, you're usually killing your opponent. You don't really need to kill their things. So that's what I played instead.
Did the gain two life flavor text ever come up on the Tamiyo Thief?
It did actually win me a game, yes.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah, I was not expecting that part to be relevant, but it actually like won me the game, which won me the match.
Nice.
That was cool. So round one of the event, I played against Rhinos, then I played against Turbo Muxus, then I played against Lands, then I played against Four Color, then I played against Storm, and then I took my first loss in round six against Four Color Control. I got brutalized. Then I drew with Susurrus MTG, and then we went to top eight. I played against Rhinos again, twice in one day. Then I beat Grixis Delver, And then in the finals, I lost to Doomsday, and I got 4 blue duels for my troubles.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a pretty good event. And so, I know you were mentioning, like, playing the green-black deck in that event, just the high roller event, just to, you know, try and see how you liked it. But you were planning on playing Cloud Post. You were planning on playing that in the main.
Well, that is Titan.
Well, yeah,
right?
It is. Yeah.
Does cast Primeval Titan. That was my plan, but I slept terribly. There was a lot of snoring in our hotel room that night.
I don't know who that was.
Who could it have been? It's a trick question, because the answer is everyone who wasn't me. And possibly me, I don't know. I was asleep, it's hard to say. Well, I really wasn't asleep. Therefore, I was very tired, and despite the fact people kept telling me that Green-Black Depths is a hard deck, I think it is one of the easiest decks I've ever played in Magic. But I don't know, to each their own. I just, like, you thought she's your opponent, and then you only have to figure out, like, 2 turns, and then the match is over one way or the other. So I ran it back. It did not go as well as I would have liked in the main event. It didn't go poorly, but it also did kind of go poorly. I played against Blue-Black Scam round 1. I just remember in game 3, I thought seized them, and they just had, like, double Shieldred's Edict and, like, some other hate card, and I was just like, well, this is, like, unbeatable. And I felt really dumb, too, because I'd, like, I played Colony Garden on Friday as an answer to Edict effects, and, well, specifically Shieldred's Edict. And I just, like, boarded it out every round. It was like, this card sucks. I get it out of my deck. So then to start round 1, be like, where is my Colony Garden? I need it. Then I beat Shadow in round 2. I lost to Control in round 3. I played against a listener, Tom, on Grixis Delver in round 4, which I won. Then I beat Grixis Delver again in 5. Then I beat Maverick. Then I lost to Abzan Depths, but my opponent had a fun match and wanted to leave, so they conceded to me.
Oh.
Then I played against Hank the Abuse Dog on Teamer Delver. This was a really funny match because when we did the die roll, I started laughing, and he was like, what's up? And I was like, I have lost every die roll today. And he just immediately goes, you can be on the play. And I'm like, what? And he's like, no, it, like, that's unreal. Like, you can be on the play. And I was like, it's fine. Like, I'm not complaining. Like, I think it's funny. And he was like, no, seriously. Like, you deserve to be on the play. So I took the play, and I won that game, but then I lost the match. It was a good match, though. Then I played against another listener, Chris, on Cradle Control, and I won. If I remember correctly, I kind of just, like, nut drew him twice. And then I played against Painter in round 10, and I took a loss there, which was really unfortunate. And then I took a loss in round 11 to Post. So, unfortunate end, because went into day 2, still live for cash, just needed to, you know, win those 2 matches, and I definitely did not win those 2 matches. The Post matchup is terrible. And it's also a little bit ironic losing to the deck that I was going to play myself. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is.
I mean, I think overall it's still, like, a decent showing. I mean, I think with a deck that you feel like there were some changes you would have made in retrospect, I think that's pretty solid.
Yeah, I'm definitely not too upset. I walked away with a positive record in both events. I walked up significantly ahead on the weekend with the duels that I won. So, and I had fun. All my opponents were very nice throughout the weekend, with the exception of, like, 1, I think. So, I don't know. It was just a good experience, minus all the snoring in the hotel room.
Which is unavoidable. I mean, honestly.
No, it's definitely avoidable. There's CPAP machines, which are also really loud, though. There's noise, or there's like those nose strips that help you breathe.
Also earplugs. So I mean, that's an option.
Yeah, which it's crazy. I have earplugs, and the snoring was so loud that the earplugs did not matter.
Yeah.
It's wild, really.
Yeah, it's not great. My weekend, though, was actually pretty great. I had a good time. I think I told, I guess it was 2 weeks ago now, I did tell the story about my John Goth round one and me having to run back to my hotel room to go get my deck. So if you missed that one, go back to our previous episode. But yeah, I mean, nothing. I did play in the High Roller event with you as well. I made top eight, but not top four. So I only got four bad lands, which,
dude, you
I
know,
suck. Awful. I really am. The matches were super, super good the entire time. I actually ended up beating a turn one. I don't know if I mentioned this on the last week, but I ended up beating my Goblins opponent who went turn one sticker goblin into Bombardier, and I ended up winning that game, which is like just the most insane thing that's ever happened in my life. But it was fun. It was awesome. So I was really happy to be able to get out of getting four Badlands is also like that's just sweet. Like I don't think I've I think it's the first time I've won a duel. I could be wrong. I think every other duel I've purchased, like, with credit, but, like, I don't think I've ever won a duel before. So that was a cool experience. But, yeah, I ended up top-eating that, and then ended up playing the main event. Did a pretty decent. I mean, pretty happy. 8-3 finish. Ended up in 79th overall, and you know, I had some really, really great games. I got to play against Matthew Vook. I got to play against obviously John Goth. I got to play against Roland Chang. Matches were fantastic, vibes were immaculate. I actually did lose to a listener too. I don't know what it is. Listeners of our show just have my number. Shane, if you're out there. Good games there. It got crushed. The games were not remotely close. Game one, I think I had a shot, but I couldn't close the door, and he was able to kind of climb out of it, and the game two was, like, just a slaughter. But, yeah, definitely good experience overall. Yeah, and obviously, TK, our good friend, won, so that was awesome. And I want to... Actually, the highlight of the weekend for me... three ones, I'll say. I found an English tether at the Seeker, in that the secret layer printing, which I love. I forget who the artist is. I think I want to say it's Ito, but a really good, prolific manga artist. Looks really good. Love it, and it was one of those things for Commander, at least, I don't like having non-English cards because most people have trouble reading it, or, you know, they don't know what it does, and they have to get a judge involved. So I try to get, for most cards that are not, like, Lightning Bolt, Llanowar Elves, I try to get English cards. I know I have the name of that store. I think it's on my binder somewhere. But that was a good experience. And then I also had a... Mighty Meeple was that store. That was awesome. And then I also found Belief from Tales of Adventure. So shout out to Calf and Cass and all those, Braden. But I ended up finding two black... Well, I guess they're black-bordered. I ended up finding two Blue Blasts, which were a really good find. Beta Blue Blasts. I think they're Italian, which I... They look beautiful. I was really pumped. It was a good find. And number three, obviously, the most important, was the ice cream. Not the ice cream, the milkshake we had. Just the journey to the milkshake land. I don't know what it's actually called, by the way. It was like a couple blocks away from the venue in our hotel.
There was the Milkshake Factory?
Milkshake Factory, that sounds right, yeah. Milkshakes were ridiculous. They were amazing. But even the walk there was really cool. Like, we got to walk under, like, this, like, crazy, like, light tunnel, and you know, this, obviously Pittsburgh is a beautiful city, especially at night. So it was really cool to see everything kind of lit up and being able to just, you know, chat with people that I, you know, I got to hang out with in the venue, but like not actually get to have a conversation with. It was really good, really great experience. All right. I have waxed poetic about Pittsburgh. You have waxed poetic. Modern?
Charcoal. All
right. Well, if you have not been paying attention to Modern, I think the format is kind of sweet. I mean, like, we've got a lot of decks popping up, and obviously since Fury got banned, there's no Scam anymore, right, Mapson? Scam's dead?
Yeah, I wish. I just, like, I don't know. I just, like, don't understand. I mean, I do understand, but I don't understand why they banned Fury and not Grief. But, I don't know. Rather than just jump into Scam, do you want to, like, work our way through, like, maybe the top 8 or 10 decks on Goldfish?
Sure. Yeah, that sounds like a good way to do it.
Which, spoiler alert, does include it Scam. Does,
yeah, of course.
And granted, you know, this is not the best metric. It doesn't, like... It is close. It's close enough, though, even if it's not, like, a perfect yeah. Show.
Well, if we're starting in order, the top deck, then, would be Crashing Footfalls, the Rhino's deck.
Yeah. Do you know what noise a rhino makes?
I'm assuming it's like a something like that.
Sure. It is surprisingly high pitched.
Okay.
If you ever hear them sneeze, it's adorable. Mm. Yeah, I guess I just recommend the listeners just take a second and like YouTube rhino noises.
Actually, I got you. I've Alexa, play rhino noises. Alexa, play rhino noises. Okay, I just want to, that way people can get their phone to do it for them. So, you're welcome.
I'm actually positive that's not going to work for people.
It might work.
But that's
fine. You got a little speaker.
Yeah, I don't know. I assume most people listen through headphones. Mm-hmm. Anyways, rhinos, very strong. I feel, it's so funny because I remember like once upon a time, with rhinos, people were just like, why would you ever play that over Living In? It's just the worst Cascade deck. Oh my god, 8 power is so beatable. Blah, 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 blah. And granted, the deck has changed significantly since mm-hmm. then, but I don't know. I just, like, remember so many people making fun of this. I remember especially constructed criticism. Mason Clark would talk crap about this deck, like, every episode, and I was just like, I don't know, I think it's a fine choice. But now it is, you know, cemented itself as a good choice. I don't think anybody would disagree at this point. But a lot of new cards, Tishana's Tidebinder, Flame of Anor, it's not the newest, but Mutavault is, like, becoming more and more prevalent in the deck. But at its core, still the same Rhinos deck. But I do think Tishana's Tidebinder in particular is, like, really game-changing, as is Flame of Anor.
Yeah, the Tidebinder always catches me off guard. I'm just not used to having to play around so many different effects. Like, obviously, I know that they could always have a Violent Outburst end of turn, and I have to be aware of that. But I've had a lot of situations where I'm like, okay, well, I want to make sure I have 3 mana up, so let me crack my fetch land now, and that way I'll have 2 things to, you know, counter a... Violent Outburst, they try to do one at instant speed. I always have Spell Pierce, that's always good. And then they're just like, oh, Tidebinder, I'm going to stifle your land. It's like, oh, wait, no, don't do that. Okay. And I've been playing a lot of the Team of Prowess deck, which I don't think is going to be one we talk about today, but I've gotten a number of Questing Druids, and you know, even like Monastery Swift Spears, rather, that ability stifled, and then I just have a Questing Druid that does nothing for a couple turns until I find a removal spell. Like, it is a really powerful ability, and especially since I know there is the one, like, cycling flyer that has, like, a stifle ability attached to it, but this is, like, an actual playable stifle effect in the format, which...
You're thinking of Nimble Obstructionist.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. The big difference, I mean, there's 2 big differences, right? Tishana's Tidebinder leaves behind an actual mm-hmm. body, which not only is just being a body relevant, but the fact that it's a wizard to turn on Flame of Anor is huge. And then, like, the weird thing is, Tishana's Tidebinder isn't just a stifle, it also turns off the card for the rest of the game, right? So, like, being able to stifle or bring and have that not do anything is massive. Or I had, like, an opponent yesterday stifle my amulet trigger. In my mind, I was playing around just like everything. I was like, okay, if they stifle this Titan, then this is my plan, and I very easily win. And then I just couldn't cast them because they stifled my amulet. I didn't have mana, and I was like, I did not think about that at all. So it's definitely a card that will get you if you're not prepared for it.
Can we also talk about the fact, like, between Tidebinder and Flame of Anor, the best card I think that people have been boarding in for this deck in particular, and obviously Living End as well, has been Chalice of the Void, which I think is obviously a great answer. You cast it for zero mana, it's very easy to protect as well. Flame of Anor happens to just kill artifacts, it just does. You know what I mean? Like, I think the fact it deals 5 damage to something is fantastic in a format that I think Shieldred is really powerful in. It even can tag a Murktide if it's small enough. That's great. But, like, in drawing 2 cards, obviously, never a bad thing. But being able to destroy, having main deck answers to Chalice of the Void is insane. But in addition to that, you also have the Tidebinder. I got my Chalice trigger stifled by Tidebinder, which was devastating. I'm still reeling. Like, that's not exactly what I was, like, hoping would happen. But it's cool to know that that's a thing that can happen.
Yeah. That is just so tricky. I feel like it just... its answers are so varied, too, at this point. Like, on 3 mana, it's like, am I supposed to play around Tidebinder? Am I supposed to play around Flame of Anor? Am I supposed to play around Hardcast Force Negation? Am I supposed to... And then it's like, I don't know. And they don't even need mana because they do have just, like, Force Negation and Subtlety also waiting to ruin your day. Yeah. And then it's like, you don't want to play into it, but you have to do things. Otherwise, they're just going to be like, okay, well, end of turn Violet Outburst, and you're just going to die. So Steck is just, like, really strong, really tough to play against.
Yeah, this is, in my mind, is essentially like the format Splinter's Wind, where it obviously doesn't have the ability to just combo and kill you in one turn, no, but it holds up mana so efficiently, you never know what to play around, right? And the deck is built on the idea that, like, I could be doing anything. It's like, yes, and that's terrifying. Like, I don't know when to play around, like you said, Force of Negation. I don't know when to play around a big removal spell. And, like, I could play a Ragavan, it could die to dead, or it can play my Murktide Regent, it can be bounced by Gone, and that's just as bad. Like, what are you supposed to do?
Yeah. So, speaking of Ragavans and Murktides, shall we move on to the second deck on our list?
Probably should. I saw someone refer to this as Blue-Red Gigantha, which I think is a weird name for this. Obviously, you shouldn't be playing Gigantha in this deck. This is Murktide Regent. It's just the Blue-Red Murktide. I think this is, like, I think a very safe place for people to be in the format. It looks like we're going back up to 4 copies of Ragavan. I think the numbers on Orcish Bowmaster have dropped in the format, so it's a little bit more reasonable to be playing, 8-1 toughness creatures in your deck. Dragonrage Channel never was on the cutting block, but Ragavan always was. So now we're back up to 8 copies there. Seems to be, like, 2 copies of Subtlety. Seems to be, like, the standard right now, which I'm not a huge... I know it's good in the format in general, but I'm not a huge fan of Subtlety just in general, but it definitely has its uses, and I think it's a powerful effect, so see how that goes. The actual spell configuration also has not really changed too much in terms of new cards. I have seen some people playing Change the Equation, which I think is cute, in the fact that it really is flexible, and I think there are a lot of reasonable spells that are red or green that you would want to counter anyways. Obviously, Crashing Footfalls is green, so that's not a bad one to hit. But even, like, something aggressive out of, like, Seek the Beast, for example, the instant part of Questing Druid, I think is a really good hit to hit with Change the Equation, or you could hit the actual Druid if you wanted to, hitting a Primeval Titan. Obviously not recommended by us personally. Yes, I know. But it is obviously a very good answer for that as well. So I really do like that card. But I think this is simply the best expressive iteration deck in the format, which I think always just gives it a leg up when you're comparing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have too much to say about this deck. I have never been a big fan of this deck. But it, you know, it is putting up numbers lately. I know Stefan Schutz won one of, like, the super qualifiers recently, but I feel like this deck won two of the super qualifiers. I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure somebody just copied Stefan's list and then just also crushed it. So the deck is obviously good. I don't know.
I mean, it's not a... Yeah, like you said, there's just not a lot of new things. Casting the Fire has been in the sideboard for a minute to remove the ring and things like that. Stern Scolding, I think, is, like, really the big addition. And obviously that has been around just as long as Casting the Fire. Just being able to actually counter the number of things that are threatening. Obviously, Orcish Bowmaster, as we listed before. You can go ahead and counter something like I guess Yawgmoth actually is a good one because that has two power, but you can also go get something less power. I think Tidebinder is a 3-2, right? Tishana's Tidebinder. So I'm pretty sure you can hit.
It is a 3-2.
Yes, you can counter that with Stern Scolding. Like, that card trades up so effectively in this format just because there are so many creatures that have two toughness or two power. Still look at you, Grief. Grief has two toughness, so. But just a lot of really solid answers. I guess we should probably segue here from that deck, if we're talking about Murktide Regent, to the third deck, which is actually Yawgmoth. It's taken up like 8.8% of the format. Is there anything new going on with Yawgmoth?
So this isn't true, but I feel like every time I look at it, there's something new going on with this deck. I went to Modern last night, and a friend of ours, Harley, who's been on the show before, was playing this deck, and you know, he's a very big Yawgmoth player, and I just, like, was watching him. I was, like, half-heartedly watching him after I finished my match, and he's just saying things and just, like, taking game actions, and I was just like, I play so much Magic, and I feel like he's just making stuff up. which I know is, like, not true. That's not something he would do. Yeah. But, like, I don't know. His opponent was just sitting there like, yeah, yeah. And I was just like, none of this makes sense. He's just, like, saying, I'm going up mana and drawing cards and gaining life. And I was just like, how are you doing all of that? I just... but anyways, Agatha Soul Cauldron is really good in this deck, apparently. So I do think the Shieldred is, like, still on the newer side. Like, it's not surprising when you see it in lists at this point, but I don't know if it's technology that everybody is up on. It is really, I mean, it's just a good card, right? But it's also really good with the card Yawgmoth in particular, because then, you know, what happens is you pay your life to draw a card, and generally that would mean you go down on cards, but if you have Shieldred out, you actually gain life, which is what he was doing. And then I think he was, like, he had the loop going, but he had a Wall of Fruits under Soul Cauldron, so he was, every time the creature came in,
adding green mana,
he would make mana. I have seen Hapatra doing a lot of work in this deck lately. So Hapatra has been, which is, again, not new technology, but it's something I feel like we've seen go in and out of the deck. You know, I feel like at some point this was a Walking Ballista deck. It's apparently not a Walking Ballista deck anymore. But outside of that, I feel like a lot of the cards are the same, but it is just a very powerful deck. The fact that it gets to play a toolbox, but, like, most of the toolbox cards are actually just good cards, such as Shieldred, Endurance. That's all really cool. You know, the Fulminator package with Soul Cauldron is, like, really brutal. Grisk with Soul Cauldron is, like, really, really messed up. So doing things like that is just very powerful. And, you know, one of the best cards against this deck was Fury, which is now out of the format. So I think this deck is really strong. I think it is very difficult to play. So if you're going to look into this deck for your RCs, you definitely want to get started now. But I think it's very rewarding if you know what you're doing.
Yeah, I think there's just so many ways to play around people, like between the Court of Callings at instant speed, obviously just Yawgmoth in general, I think is just a massive source of card advantage if you're doing it right. And like you said, Shieldred's just a powerful card. Like, obviously in this deck it works very well, very synergistically with a lot of the other pieces, but like the card will just win you a game itself. And, you know, I actually had somebody go, they got stuck on two lands, and then they had a Wall of Ruth, and were just like, oh, I'm just going to Eldritch Evolution this Wall of Ruth into a Shieldred, go. And I was like, oh, I'm going to die now. Like, died to somebody who just played two lands. It is, the deck is very intricate, and one of the things I've been bringing in out of some of the decks I've been playing is Pithing Needle. Really solid answer, right? You can turn off Yawgmoth, kind of, because obviously with the Soul Cauldron, there's ways to get around it, which it is just so difficult to properly narrow down the deck. I think some of the answers that I think are best against it are probably things like Cursed Totem. That one I
which has been seeing a huge uptick in play. I still need to order my copies, actually.
I do too. I was actually thinking about this as, like, it is essentially, like, what happened with City of Traders and Ancient Tomb, right? Where you have City of Traders and it, you know, it skyrockets, and then, like, for some reason you still have a cheap price on Ancient Tomb, and then that skyrocket also. I was like, I wonder, like, Null Rod is, like, basically just, like, Cursed Totem, but I guess it's just for creatures. Like, I'm like, oh, it's dumb. Obviously it is. And I'm like, oh, well, it just got reprinted. It's probably going to be cheap. And I was like, oh, no. So when I looked at it last, it had jumped up enough where I was like, I guess I'll wait. But I definitely do need to pick up a couple as well. I think the list I'm currently playing plays, like, three Inlard, which is, like, you know, three more than I currently have. So we will get back to there eventually, but... Yeah, that is definitely one of the better answers.
Cursed Totem is expensive. I don't know why I thought it was still at $8. 18 is much more than I want to spend on this card. I mean, I'm going
to do it.
And there is also... Yeah, there's also cheaper versions, but this is the nicest looking version.
Yeah.
Although, like, I don't even need the nicest version because I'm just going to turn around and get it altered anyways. Oh, so it's like... But I probably will not... send anything out before Denver, so like, and therefore I need the nicest looking version.
Of course.
Okay,
I definitely
this is
have
not
like
a strategy deck. Thing, but do you prefer?
Go ahead.
Do you prefer the art on the original Cursed Totem or the new?
I like one? The original. I think they're both. I think they're both great, obviously, but I like the original one.
I like both, but I like the old frames so much more than the new frames. But I think if I could get the new art on the old frame, I think that would be excellent.
That would be sweet. That is very true. All right, let's keep rolling here. So we got that. Oh, we get to talk about your buddy, good friend. Good little scam action. Shout out to Jake Beardsley. It's funny how removing Fury, which, I agree with you. I think Fury, out of the two, I'd rather have gotten rid of Grief. I think Grief is obnoxious. In Modern, at least, in Legacy, I think it's actually fine, which is a weird, I know, weird in between, but I think I talked about this before. I don't need to rehash this, but it is, I think Fury is much more format appropriate than Grief, but here we are, living our best life, and we've got a deck that does not look fundamentally different, and I think when you start adding in the copy, well, I mean, I think Molten Collapse, I think, is a really nice addition that seems to kind of slot well into the deck.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Furies have been replaced by, it feels like different people have come to different conclusions. I've seen Seasoned Pyromancers, I've seen Shieldreds, but at the end of the day, the deck is the same. And getting griefed on turn one is, like, such a miserable experience. It, like, doesn't even matter if you win or lose afterwards. It's so miserable. And my thing is, like, I understand saying Fury is keeping down the creature decks. We want it gone. But, like, what creature decks came back?
Mm-hmm.
Yawgmoth, a deck that was already seeing play. And, like, what else? There's no creature decks. They're still just this miserable experience. But yeah, so this deck is still good against all the things it was good against, slightly less good against creatures, and it's still bad against, I don't know, variants?
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of the biggest thing. I mean, like, the deck is essentially just a mid-range deck, and so there are situations where they are going to, you know, try to jam a Bonemaster and it gets hit by another Bonemaster. They try to play their Dothy Voidwalker and it gets hit by Unholy Heat. Like, the deck still trades up. Obviously, having access to the Not Dead After All is not having them rot in the hand as often, I guess. But, like, I don't even think that's necessarily true. I think the number of times, not everybody, clearly, but I think the number of times that I've killed a Fury on turn 5 and then it still gets hit by Not Dead After All is still very high, so I don't think it particularly matters when you're casting that spell. I think it's just annoying. And honestly, I think they have gotten into this point where, like, they are leaning into the fact that they are a mid-range deck, going up on copies like Shieldred. Like, this copy deck I'm looking at has, like, two copies in the main deck, and has a little more flexible removal in terms of, like, Bonecrusher Giant, which I think is actually really good in this meta that is not dictated by, but it is influenced heavily by the One Ring, no pun intended. So I think there's a lot of different things that this deck is able to do now that you are not playing four copies of Fury in the main deck. It just frees up a lot of space for trying to attack a specific metagame.
I just want to end by saying I played the Modern Challenge on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Saturday? Sunday. Sunday. And I lost 4 matches, and 3 of those losses were to Scam.
Ah.
And of those games that I lost, I feel like I did not play Magic in any of them. They all were, like, I mulled either 6 or 5 and then got griefed twice on turn 1. Or they just played Blood Moon, and I never saw, like, I never saw answers. Or, like, actually, I think there was once or twice they played Blood Moon. I drew an answer, and then they played a second Blood Moon. And I was like, okay, cool, sweet, good game. Mm-hmm. I will also say, people are trying the black-white versions of this deck. They do not seem to be sticking around as much. I'm not sure what makes them so much worse. I do think the fact that their big mana matchups are not as good because they do not have access to Blood Moon is really painful. Mm-hmm. But also, like, I don't know. I hate getting griefed twice on turn one. Getting griefed twice on turn one and then again the next turn is actually just, like, I've played against that deck twice in the past day, and I won both matches, and they were among the least fun games I played the entire day.
Yeah, I don't think the backup plan is good enough. Like, I think if you never see a Not Dead After All in the black-red version, the deck is still a really solid mid-range deck. It still does the things. It plays removal, plays creatures, that has a good clock, that has sources of card advantage. Like, the worst case scenario, you're playing Fable the Mirror Breaker on turn 3? Oh, shucks. It's the black-white version, I don't think, has enough meat to it to make it worth it. Past, like, obviously, getting griefed 3 times in a turn cycle is brutal, yes, but, like, that is actually the best thing you're doing. Like, it does not actually get better than that. And I think it's hard.
Yeah, but that's real
good. It is real good. I will give you that. That is true. But it doesn't do anything. It is a really easy way to kind of get set up for failure. Because a lot of the times I see that kind of start, it literally is black card, grief, ephemerate, and then, like, 3 lands. And I guess probably, like, a bingo wild card or, like, a Monopoly ticket. Like, it could be anything. I have no idea. But it's not something that thieves play. And I think that's kind of the issue with the deck. I think it's hard to have that deck constructed in a way that is as threat dense as the black-red version is. I think the black-red version, especially with Sable the Mirror Breaker, it's just so easy for the deck to go very smoothly from one mana to four mana or five mana, whatever it needs to do. Speaking of decks that go from one to five very quickly, can we talk about Amulet Titan? That's the fifth deck here.
Heck yeah. Best deck in the format. No bias. None at all. Yeah. That being said, I do actually think that this is a great choice for upcoming events. I have been playing it the past couple of days to kind of refresh myself, which every time I say that, people are like, you clearly know how to play the deck. And it's like, well, yes, but like, I don't actually play it other than like generally like 2 weeks leading up to events. And so there's always like a little bit of rust to shake off. And while I think the deck is much easier to play than people seem to think, you know, there is that difference between like playing it decent and playing it great. So getting those refresher games, shaking off the rest is always good. That being said, basically my only losses with this deck in the past few days have been Mulligans, Punts, or Blood Moon. The deck is very good. I think Spelunking was a huge addition for the deck. At this point, the deck, as was the One Ring, by the way. The deck is just so consistent, so powerful, and it does have the answers to beat most of the hate. Personally, I still need to figure out a sideboard configuration I'm happy with, but I think your Rhinos matchup is close. I think outside of Rhinos, let's see, your Scam matchup is bad. It's like actively bad, depending on how many Blood Moons they have. And other than that, I actually feel fine against like all of the top decks in the format. I mean, Murktide is also close, but I don't know. Personally, I feel okay about it.
Okay. Good recommendation then. That is definitely one of the decks that I constantly play against. I'm like, oh, I got this, and then I do not got this. It does not work out the way I hope. It's just the deck's really explosive, and you know, I think Arboreal Grazer is somehow like a very solid creature in this really powerful format. Just being able to be an 0-3 blocker on turn one is very relevant against a lot of the decks that I play for some reason. So it constantly surprises me how effective this deck can be.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very powerful. It's very fast. It can very consistently turn three a Titan, and that's really good. And even when you are stopped from doing that on turn three, it's like, okay, Titan is still going to be strong whenever it comes down. And, you know, the One Ring is a great way to bridge into the late game, and Cultivator Colossus just digs you out of so many situations where you're like, I don't know if I have this. And you're like, well, cast Cultivator Colossus, draw six cards, and like I have, it's just like I will cast a major ritual and end up with like five spells in hand. Yep. It's like it's very hard to lose from that position in any deck, you know.
Yeah, very true. Yeah, definitely a deck that like you need to be aware of and like the play patterns. I definitely think there are some like if depending on what deck you're playing, like it's a little harder to answer this deck, I think. Post board, like obviously, like we talked about, like Change the Equation, things like that, which are very good at countering a Primeval Titan. But we're not playing a lot of things. Like there was a point in time where people played like Flash Freeze. There was a point in time where people were playing Disdainful Stroke on the sideboard. Like that's not what we're doing right now. So I feel like there's a lot of situations where like outside of something like a Subtlety, which I think is actually really nice in this format, if you are worried about something like I don't know what's that. Philly card Cavern of Souls, which occasionally sees some play. There are not many clean answers to a Primeval Titan in this format, so, I mean, obviously, Counterspell literally is a very nice answer if that is an option for you, so. I don't know. I always think this is a deck that I feel like you always happen to have cards that are playable in the matchup, but, like, not, like, actively good outside of something like a Blood Moon or Magus of the Moon. Some kind of effect like that.
Yeah. Last thing I'll say about this deck is I hate Generous Scent, which I actually posted about on Twitter earlier today. I just, like, I don't know. I keep trying it. House of Mana keeps, like, top eighting every event he plays with one copy in his board. I've been, like, copying his list, and the int has been garbage for me. I think, in theory, it sounds really bad. People have tried to explain to me why it's good, and I'm like, yeah, but, like, that doesn't sound good. And they're like, no, it's good. Trust. Promise. And it's just like, I don't know. I play the games, and it just feels terrible.
I mean, yeah. I mean, to your credit, I will give you your due diligence here. There are other decks that, like, you know, will play Lorien Revealed, right? That they have a four-color mana base. They have access to a blue-white land, a blue-green land, a blue-black land, or... Yeah, so, like, they have the actual ability to fix the mana with Lorien Revealed. You are only just getting a forest.
Well, I mean, that's what you want it for. Yeah. It's to help you beat Blood Moon. But I don't think it ever beats Blood Moon. And then, like, it certainly doesn't beat the second Blood Moon. Like, getting a forest is not good enough. It's like, oh, you're supposed to get the forest and then besiege you it. It's like, okay, so I have to have this. Mm. And I have to have the Besaidu, and I have to hope they don't have another thing. Like, I don't know. There is a creature that it's an adventure. I can't think of the name of it, but one half is naturalized. Like, the sorcery is naturalized. Oh, I feel like I'd rather get that card.
Mm-hmm. It's like a 5-mana creature or something like that.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. I feel like the threat is roughly as good as the threat of Generous Ent. I think it's slightly worse, but, like, the spell half, if you will, is, I just think, way better. Like, I'd much rather blow up their Blood Moon than, like, get a forest and then try to win with Blood Moon in play.
By the way, just another thing to kind of keep out on the idea, I don't know. This can happen to you, so just avoid this at all costs. If you are depending on getting that forest and you're going to go get it with the Summoner's Pact, keep in mind that it is an activated ability and it can be countered by Tishana's Tidebinder. I saw that on a stream, and it was brutal. They were like, oh, it's easy game. I'm just going to go search for my forest. I'll blow it up. And then they got that countered, and they died to their own pact, which was amazing. But, you know, don't.
But, like, they were probably losing that game.
They were definitely losing that game. Yeah. Like, assuming they got out of that, and they got, like, I think it was a Blood Moon that they were dealing with. Like, assuming they got through that, they were still going to die. Like, I think they were going to die anyway, so that just kind of cemented it from the Rhino's deck. Okay. I swore to my wife that we would wrap up our local time in, like, 3 minutes. So I want to speed run the last couple decks here.
Okay.
Living End.
We got this. Living End, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs up. Hard to play against, and I think people who play the deck Living End pretty well make the matchup difficult. Make sure you have a plan for it. There's a lot of overlap with Regent, so you got some options there.
I agree. Thumbs up. You're really good against Footfalls, which is, like, I would say, kind of the best deck. It's awkward that Scamp is back on the rise because your matchup there sucks. Your matchup against Yogg is also kind of rough. So it's, like, really awkward. I think you're rough against a lot of the Tier 1, but I think you beat up everything else. So I wouldn't ignore it. I wouldn't play it, but, like, you definitely can.
How about Mono Green Tron?
Thumbs down. You are just, like, not the best big mana deck. So you suffer from the fact people have to play Hate for Amulet while also not being as good as Amulet. Also, Amulet kicks the crap out of you. Which is fine. Like, that's not a reason to not play a deck, but, like, I just think it adds insult to injury that, like, people are playing cards to beat a deck and then it hurts you and then that deck also hurts you. Like,
also thumb down. I think that the deck is able to get out of some really tough situations though, just because there are, obviously, you have your card, Oathstone, stuff like that. So there are definitely some ways to get out of it. Also, they just have, like, if you're talking about Mono Green Tron, they do have, like, actual green spells that can get destroy things. The one that I'm kind of focusing on though is Haywire Might, which I think is a really good answer, just removing a lot of problematic things. But again, I don't think it's a deck that I would personally play.
Also, Shoshana's Sidebinder is really good against
it. It is very good against it. That is very true, yeah. How about Burrowth Burn?
Thumb slightly down.
Okay. I'm thumb slightly up.
That's fine. I accept.
I think the fact that you have a really good sideboard answer that helps with the Yawgmoth matchup is really good. So I'm always kind of partial to something like that. I'm talking about the Sanctum of Iron Vec, by the way. I think makes it a lot better than it would be otherwise. Also, I think you're a deck that can play Chalice of the Void without caring about Chalice of the Void, which I think is huge. This deck definitely lost a little bit of steam by the Banning of Fury, just because that was, I forget the enchantment of Roiling Vortex. One of the better things you could do was that, but I still think Roiling Vortex is very good in this format. There's a lot of free spells that people try to cast, and obviously if they want to go get a Crashing Footfalls, they're going to take 5 damage. That's doing a lot of the work for you. It's very easy to get caught behind the clock here, so I like this deck.
I think you are slightly behind versus Footfalls, Murktide. I have no clue what the Yogg or Scam matchups are like. You're very behind versus Amulet. You're behind versus Living End. Like, I just don't think you can be rough against that much of the top of the field and still want to play the deck, since you're not, like, insane against the rest of the format either.
I actually like the Yogg matchup. That was one of the ones where I'm kind of surprised, but you end up having a lot of good sideboard answers in terms of... where is it? This one's not playing it. I was playing the... What is it called? Oh, Searing Blaze. Yeah, they're playing 4 copies of Searing Blaze in the main deck. It helps a lot in the matchup, and obviously once you can deal with recurring creatures, it is definitely one less thing to worry about. Alright, 2 more. Let's do the Hammer Time.
Bonk, thumbs up.
Yeah, bonk, thumbs up. Definitely, I think it's a good answer, or a good reason to have artifact answers in your sideboard, and I think looking at the rest of the top decks that we're looking at, besides number 10, which we'll get to in a second, it is one of the few reasons you actually want artifact hate. Maybe Tron, I guess, if you want to talk about Tron too, but I think it's a very good reason to want some kind of artifact hate, and I think it's also a really good reason you want some kind of wide sweeper, like a Brotherhood's End or something like that. Last deck, Hardened Scales.
Thumbs up. 1, this deck's really cool. 2, I do think it is very powerful.
I agree. It is the vintage issue that people have no idea how to count with counters. It is amazing how many people are like, oh, I won't block that. Why would I block that? It's like, you're dead. And they're like, oh gosh. Oh, yes, that's how the math works. So I'm a big fan of this. I've got a lot of surprise wins. Whew. Okay, we made it. We did it. All right. We need to go. I need to go. My wife is going to judge me as soon as I get downstairs, and I do not want to be judged. So, Mattson, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at ExpeditionMap and everywhere else at the same thing, basically. Where can people find you?
You can find me putting my children to bed shortly. You can also find me on Twitter at BadLuckBandit. If you're interested in finding the show, we are at Depth_podcast on Twitter. Definitely check us out. We've got some things in the work that we're really excited about. And, you know, obviously Gavin should be coming on relatively soon, which will be super sweet. But we also do have a pretty cool surprise. But again, we'll wait for that to kind of pan out. But I guess I'll see you next week.
See you next week.
All right. Bye.
Gavin Maya taps for green, the CNC's reclaimer. Untap sack of flags, don't go seek the planes. Then tutor up the stage, so pull out your playbill. Darkness podcast starring Billy Mitchell and Michael Mattson on the microphone. Dripping in mock diamonds, the collector of curtains up on act one of this magic show. Set in a forest so dense it looks decomposed. With red lacquery knights crush against death shadow. On the legendary lake covered in ice and snow. Underneath the surface lurks a lonely evil. An avatar so dark it could cause upheaval. The knight lunges forward, going for the kill. But Death Shadow's too tricky, it just won't sit still. It's stubborn denials, compile a stack so thick. The bazooka bug emerges with Gurmag's angle in. The knight takes a swing at the zombie fishes, but falls submerged for such a distance. Forsaken in the haze of the street rave's fringes, who wanna stuff her out, they don't sneak forgiveness. Her final breath draws a deafening silence, a sound so sinister no one could describe it. It's like the subtle cracking of a turtle shell, or the surgical extraction of emerging hell. The shards of ice feel a force of vigor, the looming fear releases growing bigger and bigger, until a demon's fingers linger toward the shadow of death. An all-consuming hush, the land goes swept. The night washes up, frozen on the ice. Dryad arbors thaw her out in the green sun's light. An expedition nav suddenly unfurls, revealing Merit Lage has rearranged the world. Dark death, dark death, dark death.